On radio, online and mobile. You're with SBS Radio.
This is SBS World News Radio. I'm Greg Dyatt.
And I'm Nikki Canning. Coming up, Malcolm Turnbull says there's no need for a citizenship audit.
We must not allow ourselves to be dragged into a sort of lynch mob, witch hunt, you know, trial by innuendo and denunciation.
Also tonight, more than 20 years jail for the leader of a terror plot.
Khalid demonstrated that he was a devout terrorist. He was corrupted by a dangerous, violent and perverted ideology.
And we'll preview the weekend in sport.
All those stories and more coming up in the next 30 minutes.
Good evening. With the news at 6 o'clock, I'm Nikki Canning. The Prime Minister's dismissed the prospect of a citizenship audit of MPs, saying only the High Court has the power to determine who's eligible to sit in Parliament. Several coalition MPs are calling for an audit following the dual citizenship debacle, with Energy Minister Josh Frydenberg the latest politician to come under question. Minister Frydenberg's rejected the suggestions he's a dual citizen as absurd, saying his family were stateless when they arrived from Hungary after the Second World War. Malcolm Turnbull's insisted the onus is on individuals to come forward with any concerns. He's called for an end to the speculation.
We must not allow ourselves to be dragged into a sort of lynch mob, witch hunt, you know, trial by innuendo and denunciation. There is an established process here. There is a court, the highest in the land, that has the constitutional authority to deal with it, and the Parliament has the ability to make references to it.
The Federal Opposition says it will support such a process, such as universal disclosure to deal with the crisis. Labor's accusing the government of a cover-up over former Senate President Stephen Parry's citizenship after Communications Minister Mitch Fifield revealed Mr. Parry confessed to him weeks ago about potentially being a dual UK-Australian citizen. Labor's Deputy Leader Tanya Plibersek says senior government figures have questions to answer.
It is not credible that the Attorney-General or the Prime Minister didn't know or that their officers didn't know that there was some doubt about Stephen Parry's citizenship. And I've always thought that it was not credible.
Four young men and a teenager who plotted terror acts that involved killing police officers and targeting government buildings in Sydney have been jailed. Sulaiman Khalid, his co-accused Jibril Al-Mawi, and another teenager each pleaded guilty to conspiring to commit acts in preparation for a terrorist act to advance violent jihad in late 2014, sentencing Khalid to 22 and a half years in prison. Justice Jeffrey Bellew says the 22-year-old was corrupted.
Khalid demonstrated that he was a devout terrorist. He was corrupted by a dangerous, violent and perverted ideology to which he unequivocally subscribed, which he wore as a badge of honour, but which has no place in any civilised society.
Two other men, also accused of being involved in the plot, previously pleaded guilty to the lesser charge of knowingly making a document likely to facilitate a terrorist act. The Federal Opposition has urged the government to consider New Zealand's offer to resettle 150 refugees from Manus Island when the country's leaders meet in Sydney on Sunday. New Zealand leader Jacinda Ardern has suggested she'll honour the offer made by then Prime Minister John Key in 2013, previously rejected by Australian officials. They argue it would give refugees a back door to enter Australia. Around 600 men have barricaded themselves in the centre, which closed on Tuesday, despite power and water being cut off. Meanwhile, former Manus Island detainees are expected to be given the option to receive their share of $70 million in compensation held in trust while their futures remain uncertain. Around 1,650 former Manus Island detainees, including some of the hundreds refusing to leave the compound, are expected to receive money under the settlement with the Australian government and centre operators. Victoria's assisted dying laws have passed the state parliament's upper house and will now be sent to a committee which will consider further amendments. The bill passed on its second reading with 22 votes to 18. Several MPs had indicated they'd back the legislation if amendments were made. These include measures such as extra palliative care funding and shortening the time frame in which people can access legal drugs. And a Spanish judge has ordered several former members of Catalonia's government to be held in custody, pending a potential trial over the region's independence push. Spain sacked Catalan leader Carles Puigdemont and his government last week, hours after the Catalan parliament made a unilateral declaration of independence, a vote boycotted by the opposition and declared illegal by Spanish courts. Now in Belgium, Mr. Puigdemont has ignored an order to appear before the High Court on charges of rebellion, sedition and misuse of public funds. In an address on Catalan region television, he called for the release of the Catalan officials.
This is a mistake, a very serious mistake. They have imprisoned political leaders for implementing an electoral commitment with an ample support of the population. It's an act that stifles the principles of democracy.
And now a look at tomorrow's weather. Perth, sunny with a top of 30. Adelaide, mostly sunny and 23. Melbourne, possible morning shower and 16. Hobart, showers and 14. Canberra, partly cloudy and 20. Wollongong, showers and 17. Sydney, showers easing and 19. Newcastle, more showers, 18. Brisbane, mostly sunny and 31. Cairns, it's similar there, 32. And Darwin, a possible shower or storm and 35 degrees. And Greg, more on these stories coming up on SBS World News at 6:30.
Okay, thanks, Nicola. Right across Australia, this is SBS World News Radio, 6 past 6. Well, as you heard in the news, the Energy Minister, Josh Frydenberg, is dismissing speculation that he could be yet another dual citizen illegally sitting in the federal parliament. The questions over his citizenship come after the Senate President, Stephen Parry, quit the parliament earlier this week over his British links. Andrea Nierhoff reports.
Energy Minister Josh Frydenberg has described speculation he's a dual citizen as absurd, insisting his family was stateless when it arrived from Hungary after World War II. The questions over his citizenship come just days after Senate President Stephen Parry became the first Liberal parliamentarian hit by the controversy. Mr. Frydenberg says his mother was born in Hungary in 1943, but arrived in Australia with her parents when she was 7 years old, after spending time in a refugee camp.
My mother came to Australia from war-torn Europe after the Holocaust, post-war, and was deemed to be a stateless person. It is completely absurd to think that retrospectively and against her will, she could be made to be a Hungarian citizen and that that would flow through to me without any positive act either by her or by me or people on our behalf to become a Hungarian citizen.
Hungary has rules that automatically confer citizenship by descent, which followed a bid to address the plight of stateless Jews who had fled the Holocaust. Mr. Frydenberg says it's neither rational nor humane that Hungary could purport to make his mother a citizen against her will, after rendering her stateless. He says, considering his family background, he would be required to initiate and undertake a lengthy process to be considered a Hungarian citizen.
I've made inquiries months ago into this issue when it was first raised, and it was very clear to me then as it is now that in order to become a Hungarian citizen you actually have to take active steps to go through an interview process, to provide all the relevant documentation to be considered as a Hungarian citizen. Neither of those steps were taken in my case or on my behalf.
Coalition backbenchers are stepping up their arguments for an audit of all parliamentarians in the wake of the dual citizenship debacle. Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull and other senior ministers have shut down calls for such an audit so far. But Stephen Parry's late admission of a constitutional conflict, as well as the doubts about Mr. Frydenberg, have revealed tensions and widening divides within the party ranks. Former Liberal Minister Kevin Andrews has told the ABC an audit is the only way to solve the dual citizenship issue now.
This is now a festering sore for the Parliament. If it's not dealt with now, it'll just continue to be an issue. There'll be investigations into other people. It'll be an ongoing issue.
Communications Minister Mitch Fifield has revealed Stephen Parry actually confessed to him weeks ago about potentially being a dual British-Australian citizen. Opposition Senate Leader Penny Wong has told the ABC that could be a cover-up situation.
The President of the Senate, who was a dual citizen, has revealed that to a Cabinet Minister some months ago. The Prime Minister really needs to step up, find out who knew, when they knew, and why his ministers covered it up for so long.
Former Deputy Leader Barnaby Joyce says the Constitution should be changed to ensure all Australian-born people who do not actively seek other citizenship can run for Parliament. He's fighting a by-election in the seat of New England after the High Court disqualified him from Parliament over his New Zealand citizenship. Mr. Joyce has told Sky News there's a clear need to change Section 44 of the Constitution, and he says the Labor Party should be concerned about some of its members.
Tanya Plibersek's parents were both born overseas. Now, she might be completely legit, but she hasn't provided any details. We've got Dougie Cameron, was born in Scotland. Might be completely legit, never provided any details. We know Penny Wong was born in Malaysia. Probably completely legit, but they never provided any details. And Bill Shorten's approach is apparently, unless you can prove it, we're not going to say anything. Well, that one just doesn't work, Bill.
Malcolm Turnbull insists the best way to deal with the citizenship issue engulfing Parliament is for a bipartisan committee to come up with a solution.
Andrea Nierhoff with that report by Peggy Giacomellis. Eleven past six now. Well, four young men and a teenager have been sentenced to lengthy jail terms after being convicted of a terror plot targeting police officers and government buildings in Sydney. The leader of the conspiracy, 22-year-old Suleiman Khalid, was sentenced to a maximum of 22 years and 6 months in prison. Omar Dabaj has the story.
Described by the sentencing judge as a devout terrorist, Suleiman Khalid gave his family the infamous IS salute as he was led to the cells. Khalid was the so-called leader of a six-week conspiracy to commit an IS-inspired terror attack, thwarted in late 2014. Through coded messages and secret meetings, the group of six discussed targeting officers at an Australian Federal Police building, as well as a New South Wales jail. At the Supreme Court in Parramatta, Justice Geoffrey Bellow denounced Khalid's actions as abhorrent.
In offending as he did, Khalid demonstrated that he was a devout terrorist. He was corrupted by a dangerous, violent and perverted ideology, which he wore as a badge of honour.
Suleiman Khalid's sentence was most severe, receiving a maximum of 22.5 years in prison. Justice Bellow said Khalid won't be eligible for parole until 2031.
Khalid's admitted act of being part of that criminal conspiracy was committed against a background of and was inextricably linked to an ideology which advocates violence towards people and property and which extols the virtues of martyrdom.
24-year-old Jibrail Al-Maoui, who acquired guns and ammunition for the plot, received a sentence of nearly 19 years in jail. Mohammed Al-Maoui and Farhad Saeed, who both pleaded guilty for making documents connected to prepare for a terrorist act, were sentenced to 9 years. And a teenager, who was just 14 at the time of the plot, was sentenced to 13.5 years in juvenile detention, then prison when he turns 21. A sixth member, Ibrahim Ghazawi, was sentenced in May to at least 6 years behind bars. The defence argued the conspirators had no recognisable plan and claimed their young ages indicate they were naive. But Justice Geoffrey Bellow rejected that, saying their actions have no place in civilised society.
Even the most amateurish and ill-conceived plan has the capacity to cause death to innocent persons, damage to property, and general fear in the community.
Khalid had gained notoriety in the months prior to the plot and his subsequent arrest. His appearance on SBS's Insight, where he wore an IS flag on his shirt, was submitted as evidence during the trial. YouTube videos where he called on people to adopt Allah or die by the sword were described by the judge as confronting and threatening. The co-conspirators showed no emotion as their sentences were read out, but their families visibly broke down. Through tears, a relative of Suleiman Khalid yelled out, "You're going to heaven," in both Arabic and English, as he was led away.
Omar Dabaj reporting there. Still to come tonight, the all-female military crew from India that's attempting to circumnavigate the world.
Our third leg, in which we are going to cross the entire Pacific and around the Cape Horn, is definitely going to be the difficult part. Since Cape Horn is already notorious for its high seas and rough weathers.
That story a little later. It's 17 past six. The CIA has released almost 500,000 files it says were found on former Al-Qaeda leader Osama bin Laden's hard drive. The material includes images, videos and audio clips, which the agency says provide an insight into the group's plans. Natasha Kalios reports.
The United States Central Intelligence Agency has released 470,000 files. It says former Al-Qaeda leader Osama bin Laden kept on his computer hard drive. The files include documents, images, audio clips and video. The CIA captured the computer during a raid that killed Osama bin Laden in May 2011 in the Pakistan town of Abbottabad, where he was living. He reportedly lived in a compound with several family members, including three men. One of his sons, two couriers and a woman were also killed in the raid. The material includes a personal diary, letters, documentaries and even various Hollywood movies. One video released in Arabic appeared to show bin Laden's oldest living son, Hamza, on his wedding day. The CIA says the material sheds light on Al-Qaeda's plans and workings. The agency says it released the material to enhance the public's understanding of the group and its late leader. David Sedney of the Washington-based Center for Strategic and International Studies says the release will let people further decide how they view bin Laden.
I think it's important for everybody in both the United States and the rest of the world to have access to these so they can make their own judgments rather than having to rely on the interpretation of any government, including that of the United States.
The CIA says pages of handwritten notes in the documents offer insights into ideological differences between Al-Qaeda and IS. Some of the documents also appear to reveal disagreements within Al-Qaeda itself over tactics. David Sedney says the material shows possible ties between the group and Iran, which could be important amid the current tensions between Iran and the United States.
Long-term strategically, the government of Iran sees Al-Qaeda as a threat to both the state and to the Shia religion. However, short-term tactically, if they can gain advantage, particularly against the United States, they will cooperate with Al-Qaeda, including sheltering leading Al-Qaeda figures.
The CIA says it will not release all the material seized, including allegedly pornographic material. Scott Stewart of the Texas-based geopolitical intelligence group Stratfor says the CIA's release of the files is an effort by the US government to be transparent. A former special agent with the US State Department, he says it will take months to study all the files.
What we are doing is pulling in more details about things we already knew, more details about the relationship between Al-Qaeda and the Iranians, more details about the interrelationship between various Al-Qaeda figures. And so while we're not going to have any big, huge surprises, there's still a lot of information and very important information that can be mined from these documents and put together to provide really a better picture of Al-Qaeda's ideology, their operation, and really some of the personalities that are still out there running the organization today.
That story from Natasha Kalios. Coming up, 31-year-old Rafael Nadal becomes the oldest man in history to reach number one in the world.
Very happy. Of course, means a lot, no? After almost 10 years.
A Navy yacht sailed into Western Australia's Fremantle Harbour this week, having travelled almost 5,000 nautical miles across the Indian Ocean. And there's something special about the crew and the journey they're undertaking. Kyle Brown has the story.
Just outside Fremantle Harbour, tucked away in the Fremantle Sailing Club, a new arrival sits in its berth after a long journey. Secured to the dock, a group of men and women check it over, making sure everything is in working order before it takes to the seas again. But this isn't just any yacht taken out for leisure cruises. It's a traveller's boat, a boat designed to tackle long distances, bumpy seas and wild weather, and it belongs to the Indian Navy. It's been over 50 days since the INSV Tarini left Goa with her crew of six on board, and by the time they arrive home, they'll have spent almost 8 months on the open seas. The crew were attempting to circumnavigate the globe, a first for an all-female military crew. And while the journey is expected to be challenging, Lieutenant Aishwara believes they've had enough training.
When we had gone for a trip earlier to Mauritius, we went in the time when there were monsoons. So we were aware that when we come down south, the weather is going to be more worse. So we wanted to orient ourselves to such conditions at sea. The weather got really bad and we could handle these situations. That's when we realized, okay, so we need to go for another trip to check our endurance. So that's when we went to Cape Town and it was a 40-day long voyage.
Being aware of their limits at sea was critical, with the crew due to spend almost 200 days on the ocean in the coming months. It's an even more impressive feat when you find out some had never even seen the ocean until they joined the Navy. But while these weather-weary sailors may have found their sea legs, it's still surprising for some at home, according to Lieutenant Devi.
They can't imagine what we do and how we are sailing. Like, few of them, even though if we have shown them the boat and all, like still, they are very apprehensive about what actually the life would be out at sea. If there is some windy or rainy at home, then they will call us and ask, okay, are you guys okay? Or how is the weather condition? It's very difficult for them, the one who have not seen the ocean.
The crew was selected from a shortlist of 20 female officers, all who held a university degree. Of the final six, two were naval architects and two work as air traffic controllers, with the last pair coming from the Navy's education branch. The crew was put through an extensive training program under the tutelage of sailors who had completed solo circumnavigations in the past. From ship control techniques to extreme weather and engineering know-how, the crew has been trained in a substantial toolkit of skills to make sure they can survive whatever the ocean might throw at them. But while technical skills are important, Lieutenant Gupta says their new friendships are making the journey possible.
We have now been together since last 2 years, so we know what each other is thinking, what they are going through, so we can understand that and we have adjusted very well as a team.
In the coming months, the crew will be confined to the ship for long periods, relying only on each other. And while the first leg has been a great test for their training, according to Lieutenant Commander Jamwal, the biggest trial is yet to come.
Our third leg, in which we are going to cross the entire Pacific and around the Cape Horn, is definitely going to be the difficult part. Since Cape Horn is already notorious for its high seas and rough weathers. So we are, though, prepared for it, but definitely it is going to be the toughest.
The crew's next stop will be in the port of Lyttelton, near Christchurch in New Zealand, giving them a chance to prepare for the icy weather of the southern Pacific. Once they've safely navigated Cape Horn, they'll arrive in Port Stanley in the Falkland Islands, before they cross the Atlantic to Cape Town in South Africa. From there, it's familiar territory back to Goa on India's west coast. But after all the training and preparation, Team Captain Lieutenant Commander Joshi found an experience she was not expecting.
The best part, I think, in such an expedition, it's purely adventure. And for those who really love adventure, I think this is the best thing that they can do. When I started sailing, I really felt a sense of freedom here at sea. And there are so many things that you can learn. You have all the time in the world to think about yourself, to introspect.
Lieutenant Commander Joshi ending that story by Kyle Brown. Well, now to sport, and there's plenty on offer for you this weekend with A-League and the English Premier League football. The Rugby League World Cup continues, plus there's basketball and tennis. John Baldock takes a look ahead.
It's top versus second in the A-League tonight when Melbourne City takes on Sydney FC. The reigning champion Sydney goes into the blockbuster undefeated this season, but City is even better off, having won all four matches so far. Club captain Michael Jakobsen of Denmark says the club can keep on winning because it has a better playing roster than last season.
We're better set this year than we were last year. The depth in the squad is very, very good, so everybody that comes in, they have something to offer with. Everybody gives something to the team when they come on.
Jakobsen has moved out of defence into midfield this season, and the club has conceded just one goal all season. SBS has live English Premier League coverage this weekend when Newcastle takes on Bournemouth from 1:30 a.m. on Sunday morning. And on Sunday afternoon, the W League takes centre stage on SBS Viceland when the Brisbane Roar and Perth Glory meet. Coverage gets underway from 2 p.m. In tennis news, the Paris Masters continues over the weekend, but the French capital has already got one over its big rival, London. That's because Spain's Rafael Nadal has already wrapped up the number one world ranking at season's end. That mantle is usually confirmed at the season-ending ATP Finals in London. He did it courtesy of a first match win in Paris against Hyun Chung of South Korea. The result also made Nadal the oldest man in history at 31 to finish a year on top of the world. And after first achieving the feat in 2008, Nadal admitted even he wasn't aiming for the number one spot at the start of the season.
No, of course it was not a goal. It was impossible for me to think about that when you are coming back from a tough period of time without playing tennis and with so many injuries in the last couple of years. But yes, here we are, happened, and very happy. Of course, it means a lot, no? After almost 10 years, that big gap between the first time and this time, that's so difficult, no? I mean, it means a lot to be able to keep playing at this level after that long time.
At the Rugby League World Cup this weekend, Australia takes on France in Canberra tonight, looking to make it 2 wins from 2. Another nation, Lebanon, is also looking for its second win of the tournament when it takes on England at the Sydney Football Stadium tomorrow. Lebanon hooker Michael Lisha suffered a slight calf injury in last weekend's historic win over France in Canberra, Lebanon's first ever victory in a World Cup match. But the Canterbury Bulldogs' Lisha says he'll be fit to play against England and refuses to write off his country's chances.
I'll get it right for the game, and yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. You know, we've got a few changes this week. I've said it to a few of the boys, we don't really care if we win or lose, we just want to have a really good performance, you know, that's what it comes down to, and you never know what could happen, but yeah, I'm really looking forward to it.
There's live national basketball for fans to enjoy on Saturday afternoon when Melbourne United takes on the Adelaide 36ers. That match can be seen on SBS Viceland from 5:30 p.m. Then on Sunday, it's the Sydney Kings against the Illawarra Hawks, which will be shown on SBS from 3 p.m. And finally in cricket, England's touring Ashes women's team will be in action against a Cricket Australia 11 in Sydney, while Australia's women take on an ACT team in Canberra.
John Baldock reporting there. Time to check the news headlines for you now. And Twitter says US President Donald Trump's account was deactivated by an employee who was on their last day at the company. Mr. Trump's account was down for around 11 minutes before it was reactivated. Several student protesters have been arrested during a demonstration demanding that Manus Island refugees be brought to Australia. The demonstrators briefly occupied the Department of Immigration and Border Protection building and the office of Labor frontbencher Tanya Plibersek in Sydney's CBD. A report has found the number of infants and Indigenous children in out-of-home care is rising. Statistics in the Australian Institute of Health and Welfare report show that in the year to 2016, Indigenous children were 9 times as likely as non-Indigenous children to be admitted to care. And the United Nations Refugee Agency says around 3 million people around the world are stateless, and many of them belong to minority groups. Well, that's SBS World News Radio for now. You can see Ricardo Gonçalves bringing you SBS World News right across Australia. You can also live stream the bulletin if you're not near a TV. Just go to our website, sbs.com.au/news. I'm Greg Dyett. Thanks for listening.